ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम् सिक्स्थ कैंटो चैप्टर 17 मदर पार्वती कर्सेस चित्रकेतु टेक्स्ट 38 यज्ञे त्वष्टुः दक्षिण अग्नौ दानवीं योनिम् आशुतः वृतः पृत्रः इति अभिविख्यातः ज्ञानविज्ञानसंयुतः यज्ञे त्वष्टुर्दक्षिणाग्नौ दानवीं योनिमाश्रितः वृत्र इत्यभिविख्यातो ज्ञानविज्ञानसंयुतः यज्ञे त्वष्टुर्दक्षिणाग्नौ दानवीं योनिमाश्रितः वृत्र इत्यभिविख्यातो ज्ञानविज्ञानसंयुतः यज्ञे त्वष्टुर्दक्षिणाग्नौ दानवीं योनिमाश्रितः वृत्र इत्यभिविख्यातो ज्ञानविज्ञानसंयुतः यज्ञे त्वष्टुर्दक्षिणाग्नौ यज्ञे त्वष्टुर्दक्षिणाग्नौ यज्ञे त्वष्टुर्दक्षिणाग्नौ Ladies, Jagyei Tvashtur Dakshinagno. Jagyei Tvashtur Dakshinagno. Jagyei Tvashtur Dakshinagno. Jagyei was born. Tvashtuhu of the Brahmana known as Tvashta. Dakshina Agnu, in the fire sacrifice known as Dakshina Agni. Danavim, demoniac. Yonim, species of life. Ashita, taking shelter of. Vritraha, Vritra. Iti, thus. Abhivikyataha, celebrated. Jnana vijnana samyutaha, fully equipped with transcendental knowledge and practical application of that knowledge in life. Translation, being cursed by Mother Durga, Bhavani, the wife of Lord Shiva. That same Chitraketu accepted birth in a demoniac species of life, although still fully equipped with transcendental knowledge and practical application of that knowledge in life. He appeared as a demon at the fire sacrifice performed by Tvashta, and thus he became famous as Vritrasura. Someone can read the purport with a microphone?
Purport. The word yoni is generally understood to mean jati, family.
Start over again.
Purport. The word yoni is generally understood to mean jati, family, group, or species. Although Vritrasura appeared in a family of demons, it is clearly said that his knowledge of spiritual life still existed. Jnana vijnana samyutta. His spiritual knowledge and the practical application of that knowledge in life were not lost. Therefore, it is said that even if a devotee falls down for some reason, he is still not lost.
Yes. Many things here. Well, I know there's more in the purport. We'll read that in a moment. But first of all, sometimes the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, is described as being the glorious book that has the description of Vritrasura. In other words, it's categorized as being so great because of the description of Vritrasura's qualities. That means this description is very important and very auspicious to hear and to understand. That's one thing. Have we read the statement by Chitraketu? I think we did. When he was cursed, then he said, Narayana para. No, excuse me. Lord Shiva said to his wife, Narayana para sarve nukateschana bibhyati svarga pavarga nadakeshu apitu yarta darshana. Read that? That's a very important verse. It means that the pure devotees of the Lord are so glorious, they don't care whether they go to hell or to heaven. They're Narayana Para. Narayana Para means they're completely, totally dedicated to Narayan. And they're fearless. They don't care. They're not attached. And that, he said that because Chitraketu was such an advanced devotee that he wasn't even disturbed slightly by being cursed. And he didn't try to counter-curse or counteract or get out of it. Say, well, I didn't really mean it. I mean, couldn't we reconsider this? I didn't, you know, I was just joking. Which he was, actually. Imagine that. He was more or less joking because the relationship between Chitraketu and Lord Shiva was one of, they were friends. So he was more or less joking, and Shiva knew that, and therefore he didn't take any offense. But somehow or other, his wife did take offense. She didn't quite, well, we can't say that. We can't say that she didn't understand. It's all a transcendental drama. But somehow or other, she took it as an offense that you think you're better at controlling your senses then Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva is known as Dhira. He's great. One who sober controls his senses. And you think you can question why he has his wife sitting on his lap in the presence of all the sages. None of the sages are disturbed. Why are you making an issue? Anyway, that's what happened. So she cursed him to become a demon. So he becomes a demon. And this is interesting because people will say, how do we know that, all right, even if we accept the possibility that someone lives beyond the body, some people will at least entertain the idea that it's possible. The reincarnation is a popular philosophy, popular idea. Many people accept it. They don't exactly understand how it works. But those who don't accept it, one of the difficulties they would have is, how do we know that the so-called soul that you say left that body has now returned into a different body? What's the proof of that? What's the proof? I guess proof could be that if he could remember if he could remember what happened in his previous life, and he could very elaborately explain with guaranteed certification that he was not prompted by anyone, that he didn't read a book about the person or something like that, or that might be. And of course that's accepted to some degree, not very much, not by mainstream. Mainstream science doesn't accept it at all. I say this is just, you know, poppycock. You know, there's no scientific basis. We can't prove it. But amongst the alternatives, they accept that if somebody have past life regression and they use that. And sometimes there are people who may remember. It's rare, because generally speaking, when one changes body, he generally forgets. We see that not only at the final change, at the moment of death, but even as our body changes from moment to moment, we forget. Do you remember exactly what you did 3 weeks ago today? What to speak of when you were this size in your mother's womb as a little beginning seed of an embryo? Do you remember anything? What you did? Nothing. Because the body changes. So generally people don't remember, but there are some special cases where they do. Ultimately, this is beyond our ability to verify with our apparatus. We would have to have an apparatus if we had something, you know, connected to the... Well, that's the other thing. They would have to understand the soul enough. And how would you connect something to the soul with a material apparatus? How would you connect, you know, to the soul? Or something that... I mean, Prabhupada, there was that one... Prabhupada was writing one of his books, I forget which book it was, about... Dr. Bigelow, who... Yeah, Dr. Bigelow had discovered or had become aware of the soul's departure at the time of death. He had somehow or other managed to register it on his equipment. Now, whether he actually registered it or not, Prabhupada took it as a nice thing, and he used it as evidence. That's what we do sometimes. We may not necessarily have full faith in their systems or their registering or their understanding, but for purposes of preaching, if they say something that's in line with the Vedas, which is correct, which we know is correct, then we can use that. We can use that as part of our evidence. But otherwise, how would you be able to, by material effort, you can't even see the soul. How big is the soul? Keshagra shatabhagasya shatada kalpitasita. If you take the very tip, and I mean the very tip, not the part that you can see, the very one atom, tip of the end of a hair, Take that one atom that's the actual tip of the end of a hair, divide it by 100, right? And then divide it again by 100. So 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair. That's the size of the soul. You can't see it with the eye, with our eyes, nor can you see it with a microscope, even if you could magnify, because there's another factor. Not only the factor of the size, but the other factor is that it's a different energy. It's Jiva Bhuta. Aparayamitastvanyam prakritim vidime param. Jiva Bhuta Mahabaho Yayedam Darajate Jagat. It's a different energy, it's a superior energy. It can't be seen by blunt material eyes. Ataksi Krishna Namadi. One can't see Krishna, who's completely spiritual, with material eyes, or senses, or mind. You can't perceive him. Similarly, the soul, who's part and parcel of Krishna, is in that category. He can't be seen, he can't be perceived. He can be perceived indirectly, just like God can be perceived indirectly. For those who are taking up the process of trying to understand the absolute truth through their intellectual capabilities or mental capabilities, then they can perceive the absolute truth as being something beyond anything experienced. That's the impersonal. And that's the best they can do. That process of trying to understand by speculation or understanding certain aspects of the Vedas, because certain, like the Upanishads and certain parts of the Vedas, they do describe the Absolute Truth as being without form, without hands. He has no hands, but there's another part to it. But he can accept all offerings given to him. He has no legs, but he can overcome all others running. He has no eyes, but he sees everything. So it seems contradictory, but what it really means is, and this is why one needs a guru, one needs to hear through the disciplic succession, through the guru parampara, how to understand the Vedas. Because in order to explain such elevated topics, which include spiritual, which is completely outside of the realm of mundane conception, the Vedas have to use certain language. Because it's a difficult topic. If it's just presented in ordinary language, understandable by the common man, then how will such a common man can understand? Therefore, it has to be presented in a very elevated, transcendental language. And who can understand an elevated transcendental language? Can an ordinary common man? No. It requires someone who's on that level of being very elevated in consciousness and knowledge. Just like if you go to court and there's some, so you've been charged with some very, very amazing crime that you didn't do. So you need a lawyer to be able to, an expert who goes in and says, no, this, he's being charged for this, But that's not actually what the law means. And then he explains. And if the judge, who's also supposed to be on the same level or higher level, says, yes, this is the correct understanding. The other lawyer, he didn't understand it correctly. So he's making the... And the law book is... So Guru Shastra and Sadhu. Guru is one source of evidence, the Shastra, the scriptures, just like the law book. Ultimately, the law book is the important thing. But how the law book is understood by the topmost attorneys and judges, that's how it's understood. Not just by anybody. Can't be misinterpreted. So, what was our point? Our point was that we were talking about, went off on Yeah, good. Saul, Dr. Bigelow. We can't perceive the soul because of our limited apparatus. Reveal. Yeah. All that. But there was, how do we get into this? Yes. Yes. And scriptures, in other words, an ordinary person with ordinary, mundane faculties cannot understand the Vedas. All he can understand is that there's something that is beyond. That's the spiritual, that's the impersonal concept. That's the process. But to go further than that, to understand more than that, that requires Vijnana, not just Gyan. Gyan can be taken as understanding the spirit. And not even necessarily a complete understanding, just to understand one is spirit. Which generally takes many, many lifetimes to even understand that. We see how many people understand their spirit. They're a spirit soul. Most people think they're the body. Practically all of them think they're the body. Manushanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Out of many thousands among men, one may even endeavor to understand what he is. What to speak of those who understand. And generally those who understand what they are, namely not matter, that's as far as they can go. They don't know exactly what they are, but they know that they're not matter. They're spirit, aham brahmasmi. But that can take many, many lifetimes. Pavanam janmanamante. So, bhakti yoga, or hearing from the authority. I was listening to a Prabhupada morning walk, and he was explaining what the Gyanis have to wait for many, many lifetimes simply by hearing from Lord Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, as explained by a bona fide spiritual master. Krishna says, you're spirit soul, you're not this body. You immediately understand it in about 1 minute. Why wait? Why go through such a long process? Why not take up the process of bhakti? then you understand everything in a few minutes. At least you understand that you're not the body. That's the beginning. Okay, please continue with the purport.
The citation. Yatra kva va padram abhud am yushakim kovarta apto pajatam swadharmata. Bhagavatam 1:5:17. Once one is advanced in devotional service, his spiritual assets are never lost under any circumstances. Whatever spiritual advancement he has achieved continues. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Even if a bhakti yogi falls, he takes birth in a rich family or family of brahmanas, in which he again starts devotional activities from the point where he left off. Although Vritrasura was known as an asura or demon, he did not lose his consciousness of Krishna or devotional service.
The Vedas explain that the soul is eternal. Foundational principles. That this living force, and you can't deny it because you have no proof, you have no evidence of the living force being created or destroyed. So you can't give any concrete evidence that no, we've found that the living force can be generated by just matter. Not possible. Nor is there any evidence of the living force being destroyed. Someone may say, well, we took the gun, we shot him in the head, no more life. So that means that's the end of it. Not necessarily. Because even in a less dramatic situation where a man is lying on the bed and then suddenly life leaves and all the relatives are crying and someone else comes in. Let's say you come in, say, why is everyone crying? Say, well, grandfather just passed away. No, he's still there on the bed. There he is. Oh, that's not grandfather. Grandfather passed away. Grandfather passed away, but that's the grandfather I knew. What passed away? Did anyone see anything leave? No, but he passed away. So we say he passed away, but who? What? What passed away? The body that we all knew for 80 years or 90 years still there. All the elements of the body are still there. Certainly the very split second after he departs, no deterioration to speak of, or very little deterioration has taken place. The body's still there. So something has left. But we can't say that living force no longer exists, because it doesn't even go along with our general. Now, some people will say, and the scientists will say, that's a euphemism. You say passed away, that actually he's dead. He died. The reality is death. So, but it's not a euphemism. It's true. That's actually correct. He has passed away, and the body is remaining. So there's no way to disprove it. You have no evidence, you have no machines that can put together a life force, a living force. Therefore, you can't conclusively say that the living force is dissipated or gone. And the Vedas say, not only the Vedas, but even other, could say, corollaries, scriptures, the Bible, the Quran, they also say that there's a living force that's eternal. And now, when the body dies, seeing the soul go to the next body, that's not for us. The ordinary person can't see that. But some souls can see that. Especially the demigods who are dealing with it. They're in charge of it. Just like when the Yamadutas, the story of Ajamil. Ajamil was about to die. He was 88 years old. And his time had come. And so the Yamadutas came there. Three of them, wasn't it? Three Yamadutas. That means they're Yamaduta means they're the servants of Yamaraj. They're the order carriers of Yamaraj, who is the superintendent of death. So they were sent there, and they could see the soul. They had no difficulty. Otherwise, they'd be going around, where is it? Where are we going here? That would be ridiculous. Why would Yamaraj send three people and they can't see? What are you looking for? That would be absurd. No one would die. They wouldn't be able to find him to pull him out. That's silly. They can see. And they saw. They grabbed him. How did they grab him? In his subtle body. Because what happens is, according to Bhagavad Gita, is the subtle body carries the soul, the living being, to his next gross body. So they were able to capture the subtle body with that was carrying the soul. And they had captured him, and they were about to take him to his next body or to go to hell or wherever he had to go. And then the Vishnudutas came, the Narayanadutas, and they could also see the soul. So it's not that no one can see the soul. It's just that elevated persons who are qualified can see the soul. So to say that no one has ever seen the soul, that's completely false. The Yamadutas have seen, and there's millions of Yamadutas, not just three. Millions and millions, and all the higher demigods, they can see the soul. They're the witnesses. And all the spiritual beings, such as the Narayanadutas, they're not God. They're devotees. They could see the soul. They were sent from Vishnuloka, so they could all see the soul. So how can you say no one can see the soul? You don't believe the evidence of the Vedas. Ultimately, for transcendental knowledge, you can't just use material means of evidence. You have to use transcendental evidence. Shabda Brahman. You have to. Now the proof is quite evident. For example, how can we prove that the living force is not made of matter? We can prove that by taking a body that's alive, that has a living force, and then we examine all the aspects of that living body. What is it? Materially speaking, it's cells, molecules, but they're changing. Every second they're changing. Even if you try to claim that some of them remain exactly the same, I don't accept that because they're not exactly the same. Everything is changing every moment. So there's no atom that's exactly the same as it was the moment before, because the time factor, you would have to tell me that the time factor stopped. Right? You would have to say, no, for that split moment, there was no aging. But is that true? Does a stone not age? It ages. The body ages. Everything ages. The universe ages. So you can't say that even for a split moment, anything is the same. It's aged. The aging process may seem imperceptible to us, but it's not imperceptible to everyone. So, even every moment, the body is completely different, has completely changed, but yet the living force is still there. And even if you take the scientist's view, of course they don't understand it exactly, but they say every 7 years, all the molecules or all the cells have changed. Okay, let's even take 7 years, we'll accept that. Every 7 years, all the cells have changed. So now you have a different body, but there's still life. All the matter that was there before is now gone. It's changed. But still there's life. So what is life? It's not matter. And then they say, well, it's DNA. No, but DNA is matter. They'll admit. Because if they say DNA is not matter, then what is it? And they like to sometimes ascribe to DNA the qualities of a soul. And if they do that, like they say, well, no, it's all there in the DNA. The DNA doesn't change. Well, then now you're describing a soul. Now you're describing something spiritual. It has nothing to do with matter. Because matter does change. Matter ages. Matter can be destroyed. Not exactly destroyed, but changed. That's why they say the soul, or the cells have all died or all changed. So in understanding transcendental knowledge, one has to use transcendental equipment. It means one has to understand with the soul, not with just the mind, and not just with the intelligence or the ego or the eyes or any of the sense of touch. You can't understand something spiritual that way. It has to be understood with the soul through the agency of the super soul. In other words, as he reveals it. And how does he reveal it? He doesn't reveal it to everyone. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavritaha. No. For the fools, the mudhas, abhijananti. What is it? Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavritaha. Mudho yam nabhijan. The mudhas, the fools, I don't reveal to them my nature. I don't reveal to him the transcendence. Who does he reveal to? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upiyate. I reveal this intelligence, the knowledge, to those who engage in my devotional service. Tesham, to those satata yuktanam, are always engaged in my devotional service. That is the science. Now the scientists will say, wait a minute, this is ridiculous. How can engaging in some so-called religious sentiment have anything to do with revelation or understanding some scientific thing. But again, it's beyond their capacity. They'll never be able to understand that way. It's non-material. So if you are waiting for material proof, you'll have to wait forever, because it doesn't happen that way. There is not, it's not a material phenomenon. It's a spiritual phenomenon. Therefore, a different way of perceiving it, and the way to perceive it is spiritually, through the soul, and the soul in its purified state, not in an impure state. The soul in an impure state misidentifies himself as being the body. He's covered by illusion, he's covered by ignorance. How can he possibly perceive something so subtle, sukshma, so elevated? He has to be enlightened. Someone who's in the darkness, in pitch dark, how can he see anything? He's blind. So the process of understanding the absolute truth is not through any material mechanism. It's through transcendental mechanism, and that's bhakti, devotional service. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
It's a complex phenomenon, because the soul, we just heard this description, is 1/10,000th size, the tip of a hair. Now we also hear that we are the soul, and that in the ultimate realization, we are non-different from our body, a spiritual body. So how is it that it's 1/10? Does that mean that this whole material is so gigantic that the spiritual, we're existing as we are a spiritual body, and we are encased?
Srila Prabhupada describes it like this: that just as when the presence of the soul enters into the favorable condition of the body, namely this, the male semena, and combined with the female egg, that's a compatible situation for the soul's body in matter. Then it grows based on the presence of the soul. So similarly, when the soul is freed from all contamination, enters back into the spiritual environment, then the spiritual body develops. So that same spirit develops that way. Yes?
Hey, Krishna Maharaj. I was wondering if you could speak just a little bit about the role of Paramatma. And how I've heard that the Paramatma is considered like the it's the bridge between matter and spirit.
What is
Paramatma? Supersoul in the heart. Some say that he's like a bridge between matter and spirit. It allows the soul to be cognizant of the material world. We often hear he's the sanctioning authority in an individual's life, but I'm just wondering if there's more to that in terms of our interaction with the material world.
Yeah, in one sense he's everything. Vasudeva Sarvamiti. But he has his energies, Parasha Shakti Vibhishai Vividhai Vashruyate. And for example, the Ahankara, what you're talking about, that interface between matter and spirit, that's Ahankara, false ego. That's where the soul becomes overwhelmed by matter, and that false ego is personified by Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva is an expansion of Lord Vasudeva, Sankarshan. So he has his different energies. It can be technically described, and it is in the Vedas. Ultimately, he's doing everything. Nothing is happening without the will of the Lord. But he's acting through his different energies. So Paramatma, yes. Paramatma is... he's the permitter, Anumanta, Upadrashta. He's the overseer. He's situated in the heart. The living entity desires, and then the Supersoul, Paramatma, fulfills the desire. So the living entity can't really carry out any of his own... he can desire, and that he's been given the ability to do that, but he can't fulfill his desires. He has to be awarded his desires according to his value of his performance, what he deserves. So, the living entity, according to his past actions, and he has a particular desire to enjoy flying in the sky. So the Supersoul gives him, now you wanted to enjoy flying, here's a body. Take this body, you can fly as a bird. So it's all happening. Yes, well, this next, and then you.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a wonderful class, Maharaj. So, in the scriptures, it's described that whatever Krishna does is absolute, like killing the demons or liberating his devotees is kind of considered on the absolute plane, from my understanding. So, in this regard, you brought up the point of Dr. Bigelow, who, you know, maybe he possibly didn't really find any solid evidence of the soul, but Prabhupada...
Mm-hmm. Dr. Bigelow.
But Prabhupada took this as evidence because it was towards the path of remembering God or Krishna. And so, in that sense, it's considered truth, even if it's, you know, in a mundane sense, considered fraudulent. So my question is that this reminds me of in the Uddhava Gita, where it's described that one should see kind of every item as, like, you know, some type of lesson you could derive from every item. Bhaktisiddhanta, I think, mentions in chapter 2, verse 38, that we should see every item as, you know, an instructing spiritual master. So my question is that when we're viewing the different things of the world, you know, even if it's, we kind of take a lesson that maybe this is speculation, but if it helps us remember Krishna, can that lesson be considered bona fide? Is that what it means to see Krishna everywhere?
It has to be substantiated by the scriptures, Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. If it's not substantiated by those three, then it is speculation. If it's supported, then your idea can be validated. Yes, I was thinking that this, but we have to be careful about speculating just on our own basis. It's like what is it called? The living entities from other planets, aliens, and different, what do they call them? Unidentified flying objects. So we know that they exist. We learn from the Vedas that they exist. That doesn't necessarily mean that I saw one. So we can say, yes, I know they exist, but we can't necessarily trust implicitly our senses that I saw them and they came and they talked to me, and that may not be supportable. But the principle is there in the Vedas. Yes, there are living entities that are beyond our perception and they can do these things. They can fly in spacecraft and even move without spacecraft. So that's all there. But we have to be careful not to take it beyond as fact.
Maharaj, thank you very much. You told that to differentiate spirit from the matter, it's a very complex thing. And Krishna tells in that, Tesham Satata Yuktanam. So, how to understand this, that okay, only by the exclusive devotion we can differentiate the spirit from matter. And what is the process that is really occurring that changes the subtle body?
It's Krishna. Krishna is giving Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridesh Arjuna Tishti Pramayansa. He says, I'm situated in everyone's heart and I give remembrance and forgetfulness. So it's remembering, it's understanding. Krishna is giving that knowledge. Tadami, if someone gives you something, knowledge may be, or intelligence may be subtle, but someone can give you intelligence. How do you're having a difficult time starting the car because you're putting the key in upside down. And someone says, no, no, you take the key like this and you put it here and you push this button and then it starts. That intelligence was given to you by higher authority. And if you follow that, then it's revealed. Krishna's giving it. He's a real person. And we're real persons and we can receive it. Because actually we already have it, we just forgot. Other? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for class. I have a question about the soul. Because we hear it's 10,000th the size of a tip of the hair, which would make you think it's a finite size and it exists and it takes up space in the body as like as a particle. Does it exist in the body as a particle, or is it like the antakarna?
No, that's why we mentioned that point, that you can't see it even from a material point of view because of its size being so small. But then there's another feature, is it's a different energy. And it doesn't take up space and time,
right,
according to matter, because it's on a higher platform.
Right. So okay. Kind of like the mind, how it exists over
the mind. Yeah, the mind doesn't necessarily exist in space.
Yeah.
Taking up room, but it's subtle. And the soul is even more subtle. That's described in Bhagavad Gita that more subtle than the mind is the intelligence. More subtle than the intelligence is he, the soul. Okay, last. Well, okay. Take a few more. Go ahead.
So, Maharaj, one thing that's been on my mind for a while now, and it was brought out in this purport that Chitraketu, he took a birth in his next life and he had complete knowledge of the practical application of the devotional science. We often hear Prabhupada would often say that, you know, finish your business in this one life and go back to Godhead. Then as you start reading our scriptures, you start to understand the depth of our, you could say, degradation. You think perhaps it might take a few lives. You know, you're serious. You want to apply yourself very seriously. But when you start to understand, you know, how deep we are embedded and how much there is to develop in terms of the stages of devotional service. So my question is this, is that a healthy outlook? Or is it healthier to think that, you know, somehow or other, even at the time of death, even if I'm not completely absorbed in Krishna at the time of death, then because I've spent my whole life engaged in Prabhupada's service, I'll go back to Godhead? Or is it healthier to think, no, it might take a few lives and that's okay because Krishna's there?
You have to think both, isn't it? Because it's not up to us. It's not a mechanical arrangement. It's completely up to Krishna. So I try my best and I depend on Krishna. And if Krishna wants me to take some more births to improve myself, to come to a higher level of realization, that's fine. Devotee accepts that. Narayana Parana. That's the topic of the discussion here. Or if Krishna wants the devotee to go back to Godhead, the devotee accepts that. Okay, here, yes. Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I have a question. The thing is that in Tattva Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami says regarding about evidence, like he says that there are 10 kinds of evidences, like Anumana, Pratakya, like that, so many things. But he says that everything is imperfect, like because, you know, is means what you say, because of our 4 types of defects, we cannot understand. That is like due to our imperfect senses. However, he says that sabda, that means shruti, so that is the only which is not contaminated by this type of our 4 types
ultimately
of defects.
Ultimately, that's correct.
Yes, how can you understand that sabda, the sound, is not
ultimately
contaminated?
If you really want to understand this, and even shabda, we have to hear through the proper channel. Our own hearing is not just shruti, I hear it through my contaminated consciousness. I have to hear through the proper method from the proper source, and I have to be in the proper state of consciousness so I'll be able to realize it. But the others can be used to some degree, but they only support the shabda. Okay, this will be the last.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. You said you can't understand the Atma or realize the Atma through material means, but then, you know, you can give a scientist some beads and tell him to chant on it, and then you'll realize it. But then he may say that these beads are material too, and these names are material too. So I was wondering if you can just somehow defeat that point.
Well, actually, it's true that you give him the beads, he may not understand it. There's a very good chance he won't. So yes, for him the beads are material. Everything can appear material or spiritual depending on the consciousness. So it's like a knife. A knife can be a bad thing in the hands of a criminal. It can be a violent thing. And in the hands of an expert surgeon, it can be a thing that saves one's life. So it depends on the consciousness. So beads in the right hands, in the proper consciousness, or even pieces of bread, you know, our devotees in the beginning in Russia, they were put into some psychiatric hospitals and some prisons, and they took away their beads and they wouldn't let them chant. So the devotees took some of their bread and they rolled it into balls, and they got some thread and they put it through the balls of bread, and that became their beads. So for them, balls of bread became japa beads, transcendental.
It simply relies on faith. That's pretty much what it boils down to.
Faith and Krishna's mercy. It's not just faith. You can have faith in so many things. But if one has faith and he's somehow or other pleased to Krishna and Krishna gives his understanding, I give the understanding by which they can come to him. He has to please Krishna. Krishna needs to be pleased, otherwise no knowledge comes. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Brahmacharya meeting, everyone. Brahmacharya meeting, everyone.
Something wrong with you.